Okay, now we can start.
Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA.
If you build it, they will come. Joel, seen that movie? He's in the movie, Joe.
Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA.
In our 670 of the Score studios, Jordan Malley.
Shout out to Jordan Malley.
Did Matt Peck get a signed copy of that book?
No, Matt Peck, he didn't know.
No.
I'll talk to D. Rose.
Yeah, he's going to make Matt, it happen.
Matt, you will be getting your book soon.
Kick back and get ready for the best hour of your day.
Are players buying in, Jim?
Yes.
Fair enough.
And so all I was saying on this podcast, the Locked On Bulls podcast.
Locked On Bulls, 5 days a week.
Locked On Bulls starts now.
You can just see the vibe.
Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. I'm Jordan Malley, along with me is Matt Peck. Follow us on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Hit us up on our text and voicemail line, 331-979-1369. If you got questions for us, you just want to drop any Bulls thoughts, any thoughts in general, hit us up, 331-979-1369. Welcome back from the weekend, Matt. I would say happy to be back, but it is under some weird and, I don't know, uncertain circumstances. As things kind of unfolded last week with the coronavirus, it's gotten definitely more serious here in the United States over the last 48, 72 hours. I know people across the world have been dealing with this for far longer than maybe we have in certain countries, but it's definitely hit home and hit home quick here, here in Chicago especially. But glad to be back with you. I'm hoping that you and I can provide some, I don't know, some type of escape for 30 minutes to an hour every single day while most of us are going to be, for the most part, trying to stay out of the public, stay out of being in front of people for the most part for the next several weeks. So I hope you and I can provide some of that entertainment. But how are you doing? Are you dealing with the social distancing? How are you doing with that?
What's up, Jordan? What's up, Bulls Nation? I'm doing well. Had a nice weekend. For the most part, have been maintaining the whole social distancing thing. And we were joking around on our last show of last week, talking about how Chicagoans, despite instruction from our mayor and our state of Illinois governor to not do the St. Paddy's festivities of normal, you know, the river dying and the parade and all that stuff downtown, that Chicagoans would be out at bars anyway. And lo and behold, that's exactly what happened. You know, I saw all kinds of pictures on Twitter of, not just the usual spots like Wrigleyville, but all over Chicago, my neighborhood in Wicker Park, lots of bars and restaurants. People were out and about Saturday, less so yesterday, but it's something that I think I was not super worried about even a week ago, because I tend to not just be a worrier in general. But when you've started to see some of the serious reports of how this is growing and how we're essentially exactly on par with what Italy has gone through, but essentially just 10 days behind, and how their numbers have been growing exponentially. And, you know, they had a 20% increase in just one day over the weekend, and that we look to be very much on that same course. It's to me at this point, the social distancing thing is not a, well, I'm fine, I don't feel sick, so fuck it, I'm going to go out and live my life. I mean, that it's incredibly selfish to think that way. We're kind of starting to figure out just how serious this is. And even between the last time we talked and now, the city of Chicago is announcing that all bars and restaurants are going to be shut down, I believe, at the end of the business day today, for the foreseeable future. So hopefully everybody out there that lives here in Chicago has made their various runs to groceries and those. I haven't heard anything about groceries closing down or pharmacies closing down, so hopefully those will stay open. But the last 48 hours or so since we did an episode on Friday have been pretty sobering with what we've learned about how many measures are being taken to try and get this thing under control.
And it's kind of crazy too, because it feels like it's hard to talk about anything else at this point, and something that's kind of unknown for all of us too. You know, you even talk to whoever it is, however old they are. We've never experienced something like this before. And, you know, it's too bad that we didn't take the right measures when we were warned. And now we're going to see the consequences of it. And I think a lot of people here in the United States are going to see that over the next handful of weeks. I wouldn't be surprised, Matt, if we're in complete quarantine by next week. They talked about the whole entire country shutting down in Italy because of the similar numbers that are happening. Our numbers are looking almost identical to theirs, so if not worse. So, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if that happened. You know, I always think it back, and we can kind of roll this back to the NBA and just sports in general. This all wouldn't shut down if this wasn't something that was absolutely 100% serious and a critical issue. And I don't think people, I don't know what it is, why we didn't realize the importance of it until it took basically every league, and really it took March Madness to pretty much say, hey, you know what, we're canceling things, for people to start realizing how crazy this effect is going to have. And with that, to the NBA, they kind of announced this weekend that they're going to push back their season for at least 3 months. They were recommended that they stop all activities for at least 90 days. So I think at the earliest they were talking about playoffs starting up sometime in mid-June. And we can kind of talk about Bobby Marks laying out what a schedule would look like and some interesting things there. But what do you think about this as an overall precaution for the NBA to go 90 days? And then even when we do get games back, Matt, it's going to be awfully weird seeing no crowd there, hearing no crowd in the background on the broadcast. It's just going to be very, very bizarre for a while.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's a precaution that had to be taken. Do wonder, and it's kind of scary to think about where we'd be right now if a player in a league that was active here in the United States did not test positive. Because, you know, it was what, last Wednesday when Rudy Gobert tested positive for coronavirus while there were NBA games being played. They finished the games that were actively being played. They canceled the late night slate of games and canceled everything indefinitely beyond that. What if he doesn't test positive? You know, are we where we are right now? Do all of the other leagues follow the NBA and their path of perhaps over precaution, but, you know, better to err on that side than to not be cautious enough? It's crazy to think maybe the league would not be shut down right now if none of these players had tested positive. But when you start to think about the math of how many players are in direct contact with one another every night in this league and all of the travel, and then you start exponentially doing the math of this team played this team, then this team played that team. And I think it was the only correct answer to say, well, shit, one of our players has a positive, so we have to shut everything down now. And as far as the timeline for, you know, what we've heard from Adam Silver and others who cover the league making their best, you know, estimates of when this season might return, hopefully might return, I think the most logical outcome and maybe even the only possible outcome to still have a resolution of some kind to this season is that when it comes back in a couple of months or 3 months even, they're going straight to the playoffs. The Bulls season is over. As far as the way I'm looking at this right now, the Bulls season, they are not playing any more regular season games. If it comes back, they're going jumping straight to the playoffs and maybe even doing, you know, best of five series for the first couple of rounds instead of best of seven to try and make the season end at a still reasonable time that would allow the league to have an offseason of some kind. Because I think what they don't want to have happen is for this season and this coronavirus outbreak and the way that it's impacted the league and shutting it down and postponing it to have a profound effect on next season. Because if we can, as a country and as a league, get through this so that come next fall, when the league is ready to start up again, that next season's calendar is not directly affected by this or is minimally affected by this. Because to me, the better answer is having one season cut short, asterisk, shortened playoffs, whatever, what have you. But that's better than having two seasons affected by this instead of one.
I think the interesting thing with this scenario is it kind of speeds up the timeline for Adam Silver to play around with potential playoff scenarios, potential timelines of the entire NBA league from the first day it starts to the last day it ends. I think this is a chance for the NBA to kind of move all of that up. You know, the discussions had been happening for a couple of years about talking about the NBA maybe shifting around when they start, when their league actually happens, where they could get the most promotion, the most attention. And just looking at like something that Bobby Marks tweeted out, it's 16 hours ago from the time that we are recording right now, says theoretically, if you lay it out, mid-June starts the NBA playoffs. Early August is the NBA finals. End of August is the NBA draft. September 1st is the start of free agency. September 10th, summer league or fall league. Training camps open on December 10th. Christmas Day, December 25th, would be the regular season opener. And then mid to late June would be the NBA end of season. And that's all 82 games being played and still accounting for some of those extra rest days in there too. So shifting the NBA basically ahead 2 months. What do you think about the NBA if this is the way that things go and say best case scenario is the NBA starts playing in mid-June without fans? What if the NBA just said, you know what, I think we're gonna stay with this format and we're gonna stay here, we're gonna start up the season on December 25th and that's kind of going to be the cycle? What would you think about that and some of the talks too Adam Silver's even talked about over the last couple of years doing this?
I mean, I would be open to it. You certainly, the NBA, I think, would like starting more towards the end of the NFL season, so they don't necessarily have to compete with that ratings-wise, because we already know that the NBA has Major League Baseball beat as far as ratings, especially with younger audiences in recent years. And as someone who loves basketball and to a lesser extent enjoys baseball, I wouldn't mind that at all. If that became a permanent change because of this season and the way that it's been postponed, if the NBA just adopted that new kind of schedule in accordance with the calendar year and how that breaks down, because some of those dog days of summer where all we have is baseball after, you know, NBA and NHL playoffs end, you kind of feel like it just is going to take forever and all you have to keep you entertained is baseball and, you know, maybe some golf tournaments, some tennis tournaments up until you finally get to training camp for the NFL again. If the NBA regular season went into June and then we had July and maybe even early August NBA finals, I would love that. I would absolutely love that. What about you?
The thing that I keep thinking about too, and it seems like a good idea. I mean, the dead period of sports in general is in August, and August, really August and September. Even I guess the NBA has done a really good job of expanding themselves to the point where we can get all the way through July with good content before we kind of get dried out, whether it's the summer league or the end of the draft or still free agency lingering. Can you ramp up the same attention? Think about too, it's the summertime compared to, I guess, the finals. You're playing it right around spring too, so it starts to get nice out. The only thing I was thinking about is like weather wise. It's like a lot more people are going to be outside. Are people going to be cooped up in their house watching NBA games at 6-7 o'clock at night, you know, during June, July, August when it's really nice outside? Or is that something that's going to affect us regardless? Does it matter at all with them shifting it like that? And two, like overlapping, I feel like the start of your season is kind of anticlimactic if you're doing it around the holiday season. The football playoffs are just going to start. So there are some kind of, I feel like, some negatives to shifting the season like this. But I would be open to trying it. You would dominate 2 months of sports completely and completely dominate the MLB.
Yeah, you would. I mean, you might have some issue there with, and it's, you know, summer is oftentimes when people do their traveling, take their vacation. And as you know, at least here locally in Chicago, people use those months of the year as best they can to get outside and, you know, late night barbecues. Maybe you go camping with some friends and family, whatever. So maybe in that sense, it would pull from the focus of people who are, you know, just at home watching sports on their TVs. But I think NBA fans specifically are gung-ho enough about how great the NBA playoffs are that it, just speaking personally, yeah, summer is great. And I love spending summer nights outside in Chicago on a beautiful Chicago summer night. If there is NBA playoff action on TV, fuck it. I'll bring my TV outside and watch my fucking NBA playoff games in the lawn. Like, I, you know, I would not miss NBA playoff action just because it was summer.
I think that's a good point, too. You know, I'm thinking about some of the most exciting moments of NBA playoffs or finals that I've watched. A lot of them come in college when the playoffs were starting. You know, we were outside at 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock at night, hooking TVs up. If we didn't have TVs hooked up in our courtyard in college, we had the doors wide open to the flat screens on the inside so we could be watching the game. I'll never forget that. This is still why I say it's the best. It's the best, single best moment I've ever witnessed as a Bulls fan was D. Rose hitting that bank shot against Cleveland in the playoffs back in, what was that, 2015, where they took the 2-1 lead. Yeah. Just the experience around that, it was summertime. It was a weekend. So maybe you're right. Maybe it really won't matter. But I'm interested to see if the NBA does this. But the problem is if it lingers on any farther than mid-June, July, they're seriously going to have to consider maybe just scrapping the season or maybe even trying something different where they do a play-in game and then they do kind of a bracket-style tournament to speed up the process of maybe a two-month playoff. But think about all the money that the NBA teams are going to lose. Think about all the money that the TVs or TV networks are going to lose. Every affiliate that's going to lose this money if they have to reduce the amount of games that they play.
Yeah, that was actually an idea that our executive producer of Bulls Outsiders, Kevin Anderson, recommended to me and John and Dave the other day was when they can bring it back, you go straight into the playoffs. And for the sake of putting the, you know, the league on close to a course of a similar calendar, if they wanted to try and save that as far as the next season and beyond, do a double elimination bracket. You know, here are your playoff teams. You take the playoff teams that were qualified as is on the last day of the regular season when they put the moratorium on the league. And instead of first round 1 versus 8, second round conference semis, then conference finals, and then finals, double elimination tourney. And yeah, it would certainly be an asterisk of a NBA champion, but you'd still have an NBA champion. You'd still have the playoffs, and you could probably do that in maybe a shade over a month.
I'm down to try anything new, especially if it gets to the point where you're talking about sacrificing another season. I'm down to it. We already know that this season is going to have a weird vibe to it when we look back 10 years from now, the history of this entire season. We're going to know that something was weird, similar to the way that we talk about maybe we don't even talk about it as much, but the lockout year two with the shortened schedule, this will definitely be one if they have to mix up how they do the playoffs for just 1 year, how that would look. But I know that they're managing and trying to do that nonstop 24 hours a day, 7 days a week now, and since they officially shut down every single event, all the practices, basically shut down the entire NBA for a minimum, it said, of 90 days. So, Matt, I want to say one other thing too about the coronavirus stuff. And then we want to get to some Jimmy Butler audio that we talked about last week, but we didn't get to it on the JJ Redick podcast. He was talking about two things with the Bulls and just his early days and coming up that I thought were pretty interesting. But before we get to that, this is the perfect opportunity. You're going to spend a lot of time in your house over the next several weeks. And if you don't want to go outside, you don't feel like running to the grocery store, using Postmates is the perfect time. This is the perfect time to use Postmates. The last thing I ordered on Postmates was from Rebel Wings, actually just a few weeks ago. Fantastic service in the city. They are fast, reliable. Your food comes hot too, and it's easy. What we're offering you right now and what Postmates is offering you is a limited time $100 of free delivery credit for your first 7 days. To start your free deliveries, download the app and use code LOCKEDONNBA. That's code LOCKEDON for $100 of free delivery credit with no minimum purchase for your first 7 days when you download the Postmates app. So if you've never used Postmates before, you can get $100 in delivery credit for your first week. You'll need that, so definitely use that. Locked On NBA is the promo code. Again, download the Postmates app, use Locked On NBA promo. Matt, before we get to the Jimmy Butler stuff, real quick, wanted to give a shout out to both Rocky Wirtz and Jerry Reinsdorf in coming together and deciding to pay all their game ops, game day employees, full salaries for the rest of the games that were supposed to happen at the United Center. I believe 7 Blackhawks games were left, and there were 7 Bulls games left, if my math is correct. So total 14 games, and they had Rocky Wirtz on 670 The Score earlier this morning, and he said it came out to be about $3.5 to $4 million that it would cost both the owners, but they said without a bat of their eye or without even thinking about this, like, no, we got to help these people. So big kudos to Jerry Reinsdorf and Rocky Wirtz for doing that. And Jerry, for, you know, as much criticism about the basketball team that he gets or whatever, he takes care of his people from the top to the bottom.
Absolutely. I mean, this was the right move for Rocky and Jerry to make. It's not often that we can say as Bulls fans or Blackhawks fans that we have, you know, the utmost faith. And certainly I think that goes more towards Jerry than it does towards Rocky. The chairman of these teams that we love so much and the way that they operate. But I think, you know, it's not like the Bulls were the first team to step up and do this. There were many teams prior to these two Chicago teams making this gesture and committing themselves financially to supporting their staffs. But it is absolutely 100% the correct answer, because it makes you think about not just United Center employees, but all of the people who are going to be affected by this, people who live paycheck to paycheck, which is most of our country lives paycheck to paycheck these days. And people in the service industry, people not only that work at the UC, but people who work in bars and restaurants around the city who are going to be losing shifts because of shutdowns. It's going to have a widespread effect. And anyone who has the means to help absolutely should. And that absolutely includes, you know, billionaires who own sports franchises.
And a quick credit too to Zion Williamson, man, donating $100,000 of his own money, 19, just stepping up without having to think twice about it too. And, you know, after the Pelicans, I'm sure they retracted their statement from whatever they made before, saying that they don't own the building, so they weren't sure how or what to do or how, you know, whatever. Whatever that statement was that they made was complete garbage. Zion Williamson's like, forget it, I'm going to pay for it, $100,000, and I'm going to pay for these employees for the first 30 days. So good on him, man. And we'll see a lot more players, a lot more people start to donate, be very generous with their money. And it's nice to see, you know, all the time and effort that these people put on behind the scenes and right in front of us, too. They're going to be without jobs. I mean, we see it affected too, Matt, in sports media. A lot of games aren't going on the radio. That's a lot of extra jobs, a lot of extra hands that are needed on day of games. Shows are affected by it too. So we're seeing it here in sports media. Everybody's being affected by this, and it's crazy. But I'm glad that Rocky Wirtz, Jerry Reinsdorf did the right thing, and they're going to continue to do it. So they have a huge impact, and I think that's why a lot of people here in Chicago, regardless of what's going on the ice or the floor or the field, really do respect our owners because they take care of their people here.
Absolutely. Real quick before we get to Jimmy, just a quick update that just came across my Twitter alerts. This is from our Bulls insider, Casey Johnson for NBC Sports Chicago. Per NBA directive, the Bulls met at the Advocate Center today for COVID-19 educational meeting and regulations moving forward. It was the first team gathering since their flight home from Orlando. And he said, and yes, attendees at least 6 feet apart. So there is, you know, hopefully at least some good news, general news that the Bulls are at least for a while today together at the Advocate Center, getting information on what exactly they should be doing while they're in this holding pattern, and the best ways that they can keep themselves safe and keep themselves free of spreading this. It has, like, it's, you know, it's a silly silver lining of a very serious and scary time. But it has been kind of fun, Jordan, to see the way that NBA players have kept themselves entertained over the last, you know, week or so since their league and their season has been shut down. A lot of them, you know, doing a lot of gaming with their preferred video games. And did you see that one tweet from John Morant that he, like, a video of him at his house where he was, like, pretending to do his entrance in starting lineups, high-fiving invisible teammates that weren't there? I mean, these poor athletes are just probably dying of boredom right now.
That's a funny segue to that. One of the questions on JJ Redick's podcast to Jimmy Butler was talking about culture and, like, the culture that he is around the Heat, and surprising answer too, even when he brings up Chicago. But to your point about the whole, what are guys doing to entertain themselves now that basically you have to be in isolation, Jimmy gives an interesting perspective on younger guys compared to maybe guys 10, 20 years ago, and also to the overall culture of what the Heat are doing and comparing it to how he was when he first started and was here in Chicago back in the early 2010s. Take a listen.
Have you ever had a locker room or a culture like this before in your career?
Nah.
At no
not
point.
Like this. Nope.
We're like early Chicago days.
Mm-mm. Not like this.
Really?
Not like this. Yeah. Chicago was way different. Because whenever I got to Chicago, you're talking MVP Rose, Joe Kim in his prime, Luau in his prime. So, like, those guys were moving way differently than a lot of other people. And with that being said, back in the day, like, when I came into the league, the partying scene was, like, out of this world. So I'm looking at it like these guys are at the absolute peak of the NBA, and I can see how you could easily get lost in this thing. So it scared me. I was like, man, everything's right there at your fingertips. If you get lost in the mix of going and doing that, pretty soon you could be out of the league. And that's why I respected those guys so much, because they stayed in, like, tip-top shape and stayed away from that. Or if they did go do whatever, nobody ever knew about it.
Right. You think the party was crazier then than it is now?
Man, yeah. Yeah.
I do too.
Without a doubt.
And they go on to talk about, too, the partying scene, even back, like, early 2000s, late 90s, early 2000s, even, like, right when Jimmy entered the league, too, compared to what it is now. And that was less than 10 years ago. The thing that they talk about too is the social media aspect too, is, like, guys just don't want to get caught on camera doing stuff. You could hide things a lot easier. But I did find it fascinating him talking about the Bulls culture. Matt, this seems just to be a theme when you talk about 2010 to 2014, 2015 Bulls in that era. It seems like every dude in that locker room was so respected by one another, and sure, they had their bouts with each other. Jimmy and Derek towards the end, and Derek and Joakim at one point, but there's no doubt that there was respect, and each one of those guys wanted to genuinely win. And I feel like all of that kind of gets overshadowed once again by the Rose injury, not to his fault or anything, but it sucks because we're finding these stories out 3, 4, 5, 6 years down the road about these guys and what they were doing inside the building that we couldn't hear anything from for the longest time. So that's the one main thing that I was getting out of it, though. Just no matter who speaks from that team from the past, they all had so much respect for each other and all knew that they really, really, really wanted to win. Just, again, the tragedy of the Rose thing just kind of let all the dominoes fall, and it sucks to play the what if game with that team.
Yeah, because I think they could have been close. I really do. It you always have that shadow, you know, in the background of, yeah, but LeBron, you know, until just a year ago when LeBron left for the Western Conference, there was always that, well, yeah, but LeBron, and it didn't matter if he was in Cleveland or Miami, you had that scary thing waiting for you when you were a team that was trying to make a deep playoff run, maybe even get all the way out of the conference and into the finals. But when Jimmy was making his ascension as a legit star, an all-star in this league, Derek was going through injuries, Joakim was battling injuries, Luol was, you know, nearly dying from spinal taps and things of this nature. So it is an unfortunate game of what if to play, but there certainly was a lot of mutual respect in that locker room. And I think and one of the other things that Jimmy touched on in his conversation with JJ was the respect that, that they all had for Tibbs and how much impact on Jimmy's development. Because, you know, Jimmy would get really upset with Tibbs early on, you know, in his rookie year when he wouldn't be given an opportunity. And he was talking about how Lou Wall and some of the other vets would just tell him, like, hey, man, just keep putting in the work. Your time's going to come. You know, I promise you, your time's going to come. And then Jimmy became Tibbs' favorite workhorse. Like, he became Lou Aldang 2.0. I'm going to play you 46 minutes tonight. We're going to go get that W. I'm going to make you guard the best player on our opponent. And I'm also going to ask you to, you know, to shoulder a pretty heavy burden on the offensive end. And I think, you know, who knows where Tibbs goes from here. We've heard some rumors, and obviously, you know, coaching searches might be put on hold right now, just like everything else. We heard a little bit of a rumor that there was some mutual interest between him and the Knicks, but it's unfortunate how the Tibbs era ended here. I think it was time for all parties involved to part ways, but you could really tell that Jimmy had such tremendous respect for Tibbs. And then I think it kind of clues you in a little bit to the way that things ended and the way that things soured. When you mentioned the fractions in the locker room between Jimmy and some of the other Bulls players, the fact that Fred Hoiberg was there running things then didn't help matters either, because it's pretty clear that Jimmy never had a great amount of respect for Fred Hoiberg.
And it's interesting, too, to hear him kind of lock in, and maybe this is more a testament to what the Heat have been able to do over what the last two decades with the culture that they're able to build, for him to say that the, it seems like he didn't say it was necessarily better, but he said it was different, but different in a better way for him. And maybe he was referring more to, you know, he brought up, first of all, Rose being an MVP right when he came into the league. So maybe it was just the attention surrounding that Bulls team. Multiply that with the fact that you had three of the best players in the team in the middle of their primes, and Rose being the center of the tension and center of the league, a lot different than maybe how that Heat team is this year. Very underrated underdogs. Nobody thought they were going to be as good as they were this year. So maybe it is that in a combination of the work ethic too, but then it goes back to Eric Spoelstra too, the kind of culture he's kept even without, with, you know, post LeBron era and post Dwayne Wade and post Chris Bosh. So it is kind of interesting to hear him talk about that, but I think it was more of a respect of the player, more of the respect of his teammates and the players in the core group in Chicago. And it seems like now he's talking about culture from top to bottom, talking about management, whoever he interacts with. He seems like he feels more fit in Miami, and maybe it's just a different stage of his career. But I thought to that, there's one other thing I wanted to play for you, and he talks about who he credits with how his NBA path ended up to this point where he's now a top 15, top 20 player in the NBA. And you'd be surprised who he talks about when he credits that.
I'm not going to say it was because of Tibbs. I came into the league with some really good vets. Like Luau, when I would get pissed off, he would be like, you got to keep working. Your time's going to come. Trust me. Yada, yada, yada. Booze, Joe Kim, D Rose, everybody was like, you got to work. Your time is going to happen. You're here for a reason. But you got to be ready, because if you're not, it's on you.
Yeah.
So as much as it was Tibbs, it was even more my teammates at the time that taught me you got to work no matter what. So, you know, a lot of props, and it got to be said about them. They kept me in it.
That is some of the luck of all this stuff of, like,
there's so much luck in everything, though.
Yeah.
Like, luck is a part of life, you know. Talent, skill, God-given, all of that stuff is part of it. But I got lucky to end up going to Marquette, because if Buzz wouldn't have just came down to my junior college and had already had Joe Foles going, he would have never met me. I would have never met him. The chances of me going to Marquette, even lower now. Like, luck is a part of everything.
Yeah.
It's very interesting. He, again, credits a lot of the Bulls players. You hear a lot of the same names when players come out and talk about that era. Lou Aldang, Joe Kim Noah. He threw Boozer in there too. But a lot of guys surrounding him, you know, and I never even thought about, Matt, like, what happens if Jimmy Butler is picked two picks ahead of where the Bulls took him? Maybe he didn't go to Chicago. Would he be the same player that he was? Would he turn out the same way that he did? Or maybe he goes two picks behind. And I'm not looking at it right now. I don't know who the teams were there, but it is interesting to think about a player's path in their career by just being selected in what organization they get dropped into. And we talk about this all the time with high lottery picks too, with all the pressure of having to quote unquote save a team and all the pressure that ends up there, as opposed to what Jimmy came into. He came into a team that was ready to contend and potentially win a championship, and it allowed him, it seemed, to grow through a lot of those pains, those struggles the first couple of years of his career.
Yeah, and the tail end of that clip that you just played, that he, you know, he credits Tibbs, he credits his Bulls teammates, but even beyond that, a little bit of luck and certainly some dedication and true level of caring and human connection with his Marquette coach Buzz Williams, who had always advocated for Jimmy being an NBA level talent from when he, you know, convinced him to come play at Marquette. And played on a pretty darn good Marquette team that also, you know, featured current NBA player Jay Crowder, among others. Like, that was a fun Marquette team. You know, one of my good buddies is a diehard Marquette fan, and he had me watching Jimmy and that Marquette team from day one, saying, like, there's some good young talent on this team. And I remember watching a couple of Marquette games and thinking that, you know, Jimmy certainly had potential. Not nearly the potential of what we ended up seeing from Jimmy now as essentially a perennial all-star player. But anytime you hear Buzz Williams talk about Jimmy, and he's, you know, he's gone on record talking about, you know, former players a number of times, but he always seemed to have a special, like, inkling and connection to knowing that Jimmy had tremendous potential. And the Bulls themselves have said, when we took Jimmy at 30, we really liked the kid, but we had no idea he was going to be this good.
It's crazy, Nate. And then just to throw the credit back to his teammates, you know, I always wonder too, just not about the impact of one guy on a team and what he's doing on the floor, but the impact he has on other guys for several years. You think about all of the players that surrounded some of the greatest players. Think about the guys that surrounded LeBron. Outside of pure talent, he elevated a lot of those guys and allowed those guys to have pretty damn good careers. And you think about the guys that surrounded Jimmy here. I mean, you're talking about, again, three guys in their prime, three all-stars, one MVP. I mean, no better people to learn from than those guys. So I thought that was cool. If you want to check out the rest of the podcast, you can. It's JJ Redick's podcast on The Ringer. He does go into some interesting stuff about the Sixers as well and his time there, which, you know, if you like Jimmy drama, and he also talks a little bit about the Timberwolves stuff as well. If you like Jimmy drama, it's a pretty good listen. It's a fascinating listen. And Jimmy Butler is just entertaining to listen to in general. So I did enjoy the podcast. So you should check that out. I think that's going to about do it here on Locked On Bulls, though. We will be back the rest of the week every single day, filling you guys in on what's going on with the NBA, although there won't be much to update, but we will have content every single day. It'll be fun. It'll be kind of your escape for 35, 45, maybe even an hour out of the day. Hopefully we can do that for you. But follow us on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls_Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Hit us up on our text and voicemail line. We're going to start using that too. If it's a way, if you guys want to talk about NBA prospects, you just want to talk about the evaluation of this team in year three of the rebuild, give your final opinions on it, we'd love to hear from you. So 331-979-1369 is the place to call us or text us any time of the day too. So if you listen to a podcast at 3 a.m. and feel like you got to get a Bulls thought off, you can hit that text and voicemail line up. We will be there for you. So for Matt Peck, I'm Jordan Malley. Bulls Nation, have a wonderful day. Be back tomorrow with a fresh episode. For Jordan and Matt, we are out. Deuces.
We talking Bulls.
I don't want people to think that I'm some kind of like circus freak, you know?
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com